Brian Levine, welcome back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Is it Friday already? This week has gone by so fast.
I know. I don't know how that happens, but it's been so much fun to speak with you. You know so much about Glenn Gould, obviously so passionate.
Well, it's a big subject, and it's one that is inspired so much writing, so many treatments like the movie, 32 short films about Glenn Gould, or tens of thousands of articles, doctoral dissertations, two operas now, a ballet, and lots of pop songs, as it turns out. He is very much a living presence, even though he's been gone 40 years.
That's amazing. Well, you know, you and I both met the very first time, I think it was the 25th anniversary of the passing of Glenn Gould, in Berlin, where there was a huge number of events going on.
There was a week-long film festival. It was entirely sold out. And the audience was just totally turned on. As I remember, the one and only Chilly Gonzalez was the opening performer for that. He did what he called a concert on Glenn Gould's chair.
I remember that.
Yes. It was hilarious.
So the impact of Gould, I have to share a story with you, and I'm curious about your response. I think I have a feeling I know what it's going to be, but I'd say about 20 years ago or so, I was in a social setting, which included a conductor who will remain nameless, who was talking about Glenn Gould and said, oh, Glenn Gould, I mean, he's so overrated. He actually hasn't impacted piano playing at all. Nobody plays like him.
Well, that's exactly the point now, is it? You know, we have many who follow a more or less traditional path. And then we have the outliers. They're the geniuses, the rebels, who are not bound by the conception and the idea. To give you an illustration, we gave the Glenn Gould Prize to Philip Glass, and it was at the National Arts Center with the National Arts Center Orchestra. And I remember very clearly in his speech, he said, I don't know if Glenn Gould liked or would have liked my music. What I do know is that sometimes he was criticized for taking too many liberties and playing around with the text. He said, and Philip went on to say, I'll tell you something. With a mind like his, if I had the privilege of having my music played by him, whatever he wanted to do would be fine by me. If he wanted to rewrite it, fine by me. It would be an honor. And that, I think, is a pretty eloquent tribute that's beyond the usual run of the interpretive norms. They are, as the Richard Werman, who founded TED, said, he's the kind of artist who creates an entirely new world, a new field entirely of his own, so you can't compare him by the usual standards.
Absolutely not. And yet, I would say, you know, if you waited 20 years, then Víkingur Ólafsson would beg to differ.
Well,
definitely influenced.
He's certainly got fantastic promise.
Yeah, absolutely. But to his impact, I wanted to talk to you about the art of recording because it did become his main focus and his musical expression. Was it he who really started with the, you know, splicing and dicing style of recording, that sort of highly edited form of perfection?
Yeah. Of course, he had the technical facility to play virtually anything from start to finish. He could memorize a score by playing it through once. Or reading it through once. But so it wasn't that he needed the help of editing. And so it wasn't a crutch. I would say that he used it as an artistic tool, the way a writer uses editing to refine their prose and come up with the expression of thought that ultimately they want. You go in, you kill your darlings, you take out phrases that don't seem to work, and you create the expression over time. So it's the difference between speaking off the cuff, like I'm doing now, versus writing a masterpiece novel. And so, you know, if anything, Gould may not have been the first to use editing. He was the first to use it creatively and to say, this isn't a weakness. It's not a crutch. It's not something you have to apologize for. It's something you should be proud of. It's something that allows you to get closer to your ideal. So he was the person who basically turned this from being, you know, sort of a dirty little secret into a real positive artistic virtue. And in so doing, in many ways, liberated the recording as a unique independent art form.
I wanted to move on to some of his music now, and maybe we should listen to the Brahms first.
Oh, yes. Well, talk about sublime. Talk about something that takes you to another world that is ecstatic. And something that, you know, for those who find Gould's playing or accuse his playing of being cold, analytical, anti-romantic, I give you Exhibit A.
Here is the Intermezzo in A, Opus 118, No. 2 by Johannes Brahms.